genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take the poll that is up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. I ask a real simple yes-no question. The question is, will the California primary be important in selecting the GOP nominee for the 2012 presidential election? And the answers are either yes, it will, or no, it will already be decided by then. Go to my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com, and take the poll. I'll announce the results of the poll on Thursday's show. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is challenging conventional wisdom. Each of my guests will present ideas to challenge the conventional wisdom in their area of expertise. My first guest is a writer for the Wall Street Journal who's looked at the concentration of wealth in America and come to some interesting conclusions. We'll discuss his latest book, The High Beta Rich. My second guest is the original Catwoman in TV's Batman series in the 1960s. We'll discuss life lessons that she's learned throughout her life from her book, The Conscious Catwoman. My third guest is a professor at the University of Texas at Dallas. We'll examine his thesis of using economic relationships to build more peaceful, prosperous, and a secure world from his latest book, The Peacekeeping Economy. And if you want to ask a question or join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Robert Frank is a senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal, where he writes a weekly column and a daily blog called The Wealth Report. He's been with the Wall Street Journal for 18 years, with postings in Atlanta, London, Singapore, and New York. He was part of a team of reporters that won the Overseas Press Club Award in 1998 for its coverage of developing economies. He lives in New York with his wife and his two daughters. Joining us from New York, hi Robert, how are you today?
Good, thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. Love to have thought leaders like yourself come on the show and express their opinions on this. And I want to just start right at the top with guys that are clever entrepreneurs. There's this new occupation that has come up since the Great Recession of 2008. It's called a high-end repro man. In fact, any person that's a person who repossesses yachts, airplanes, racehorses, expensive cars, everything else. We're fortunate. We have one right here in Santa Barbara County, Ken Hill, and there's another man that you highlight in your book, Ken Cage, as well. They make their living by repossessing the toys of the rich and the famous. And these are the toys that the high beta rich buy when they're out there. So let's start with the beginning, with the title of your book. What is a high beta rich?
Right. Well, you know, the terrific theme of your show, which is the, you know, unconventional wisdom. I've been covering rich people for more than 8 years, and my conventional wisdom was always that once you got wealthy, you stayed wealthy, that basically the rich just get richer and the rest of us don't. In fact, when I started digging deeper into the world of the wealthy, I discovered that, in fact, the 1% is actually the most volatile and manic part of our economy. Starting in the 1980s, for some reason, this top 1%, which used to be the most stable group in our income chain, suddenly became the most manic. So when times are really good, the wealthy do two or three times better than the rest of us. We sort of all know that story. That's the conventional wisdom. The unconventional wisdom is that when we face a downturn, the wealthy lose two or three times as much, both on a percentage and real basis, as the rest of us. So, you know, we all heard the millionaire next door, which is the sort of smart and thrifty millionaires. Well, now we're in the age of what I call the manic millionaire. and high beta is a term that Wall Street uses to refer to a stock that really has crazy highs and lows. And so because so much of the volatility in the 1% is driven by financial markets, I call these new rich the high beta rich.
All right. And in stock parlance, alpha is the value of a stock. Beta is the measure of risk for that particular stock. My guest is Robert Frank. Robert, I guess the first question that I had in reading the title of your book is, what's the difference between the high beta rich and what old money families used to call nouveau riche?
Well, they're sort of similar in that the nouveau riche, tend to love status. They tend to live a little bit beyond their means, and they tend to borrow and sometimes have occasional blow-ups. I mean, we all sort of are familiar with the lottery winners, the occasional celebrities who dabble in real estate, and the professional athletes. But we're not used to so many business people who, are supposed to know a thing or two about money, blowing up at the rates they are. And again, the average loss for millionaires in this latest recession is somewhere between 20% and 30%.
Mm.
And that's a much greater loss than the rest of us. So money used to be made by making something. You know, you had to make something of value, or it came from inheritance, or it came from the ground, usually from oil. Now a lot of the fortunes today come from the world of finance or are rooted in the stock market. And we all know that stock markets have just gone crazy. And as a result, wealth has also become more manic.
Well, it's interesting. You trace this all the way back to the 1980s. And I find that interesting because it was in the 1980s when the Forbes 400 wealthiest people in the United States started to see the old name families of real inherited wealth start to drop off. So you saw the decline of the Rockefellers, the decline of the Vanderbilts, and the names that we have traditionally associated with big money being replaced by the likes of a Bill Gates, by the likes of a Steve Jobs, and the others who were making money in that time. What was it inherent in the 1980s that created this seismic shift that you report?
It's a great observation, and it's one of the mysteries that economists are still trying to figure out. I mean, as best they can tell and as best I can tell, what happened is three things coming together, and you've really seen it in California. You saw the rise of new technologies in the 1980s, the personal computer and later the Internet, which sort of shifted a lot of the wealth in California to the north. You had the financial markets becoming deregulated and a lot more money. Everybody started investing their retirement plans in the stock market. Overseas governments started investing in the stock market. So you had technology, you had deregulation and more money in financial markets, and you had, lower taxes on the wealthy. And so all these things came together to really fuel this new generation of wealth. Our culture, as you point out in the Forbes list, we remember back in the 80s, shows like Dallas and Falcon Crest were big. Our culture really embraced the world of wealth in a way that's it's hard to see right now, given some of the anti-wealth,
Occupy Wall Street.
Exactly. But really back in the 80s, we went from a time when wealth wasn't talked about or glorified to a time when, everyone wanted to get wealthy and respected the wealthy.
My guest is Robert Frank. He's author of the book, The High Beta Rich, How the Manic Wealthy Will Take Us to the Next Boom, Bubble, and Bust. And that brings us to the subtitle of the book, Robert. You know, this increasing vulnerability that we have to the booms and the busts of these high beta rich that you write about, they're wreaking havoc on our consumer economy, our financial markets, and our communities. Describe how this is impacting us, even at the community level here in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties.
Well, it's there are really two ways, especially in California. The first is, like many states, California had so many millionaires created with real estate, and people thought that the value of their real estate was real, and so they borrowed against that, they spent against that, and as a result, when values came down sometimes more than 70-80%, a lot of them were caught upside down, and they owed too much money. So for the first time in recent history, we have mansions being foreclosed. We have, multi-million dollar homes being sold at auction because there simply are too many of them and not enough buyers. So the real estate boom is really an example of how this new bubble economy that's been created by all these forces has fueled a lot of the wealth and created crashes. And that's where you have guys like Ken Hill of Santa Barbara, who's called the Grim Reaper. He's a repo man who takes private jets and yachts and things like that. And, you know, again, the fact that these guys even exist is really a sign of our times. So that's one way. We just see so much wealth being created and quickly destroyed.
Well,
the top 5%, top 5% accounts for more than 37% of consumer spending in this country. So when the rich are doing well, our consumer economy just explodes. The problem is when they stop spending, they just turn the lights off. They don't buy handbags and luxury goods, which is a large part of their spending, because they don't need them. And so the consumer economy, especially in wealthy areas, really just tanks.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that statistic. That was Mark Zandi of Moody's who wrote the 5%, top 5% of American earners account for 37% of consumer spending. Back in the 80s, this was known as the trickle-down economics or supply-side economics by some. How has this Reagan-esque doctrine outlived its usefulness, or is the financial meltdown of 2008 a direct result of pursuing such policies as we really created back in the 1980s?
Well, there's a great line from the economist John Kenneth Galbraith, who said that if you feed the horse enough oats, he'll leave some for the sparrow. And you know, it's really an analogy that says not so much that wealth trickles down, but that, you know, the top 1% have so much wealth that, you know, it does feed a little bit of the economy below them. And that has been true. I mean, the last boom was led in part by the wealthy who built a lot of homes and employed a lot of people. And I profile a couple in California in my new book that had a household staff of 110 people in one of their houses. Now, when the economy crashed and they got hit, they filed for bankruptcy, and all 110 of those people lost their jobs. So it's, you know, basically trickle-down economics works a little bit on the way up. They do employ people, they do create jobs, but it really hurts on the way down. So now we're in an age of what I call trickle-down risk, where it's not just the money that trickles down, but what really trickles down are the risks and the losses, again, in terms of job loss, and we all saw the tax bailouts, and really the pain that's felt from the tragedies at the top. I mean, a lot of people ask me, why should we care? You know, I profile many billionaires in the book who either blew up or came close to losing everything. And they're fascinating stories, and people say, why should we care? We should care because it affects our whole economy. And then, more importantly, it affects our government.
That it does. My guest is Robert Frank, author of the book The High Beta Rich. A little closer to home for us, Robert, Major League Baseball bet and lost on one of these high beta rich people, Frank McCourt, who bought the L.A. Dodgers. In what way does the McCourt saga really illustrate the point that you're trying to make in High Beta Rich?
Well, McCourts are just a classic high beta wealthy couple. You know, they used a lot of leverage, both in terms of buying the Dodgers and in terms of the previous asset that they traded in for the Dodgers. They basically used their asset as a giant ATM machine to fund a lifestyle that is beyond what any of us could imagine. You know, the number of homes they owned, the Russian psychics they employed, you know, basically using their asset as a cash machine rather than a long-term wealth creation vehicle. And, you know, I think they're both going to be fine financially, but basically the same story of, you know, using an asset, over-leveraging, overspending, and not really being conscious of the worst-case scenario. And, you know, I do want to get a little bit to California and taxes, because that's an area where I think the high beta phenomena has had a huge impact, and I think, you know, your voters are going to have to think about how much they want their state to depend on this group in the future.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, and tax reform is actually where I was going next, because I was going to challenge you. I mean, we need these high beta rich. The top 1% in the United States earn 20% of the U.S.'s income. They pay 38% of the federal income taxes, and I'm not sure what the state taxes are. So don't we need these people? I mean, isn't it important to have these high beta rich so that we can continue to operate our government and run the government programs that we've set up?
The sad part is we absolutely do. I mean, we not only need them, but they are the livelihood now. I mean, in New York, California, and New Jersey, the top 1% account for more than 40% of personal income taxes in the state. And in California especially, personal income taxes have become much more important as other sources of revenue have decreased. And so, you know, many people look at this. If you look at the dot-com bust of 99-2000, and then you look at the most recent budget crisis, which really started in 2009, Almost all the budget hole in California in both cases was nearly all attributed to the decline in incomes of the top 1%. All those multimillionaires in Silicon Valley and the venture capital guys, when they crashed, the personal income taxes just, you know, fell more than anyone expected because they didn't understand the high beta rich. And now what's happening, if you look at California, Fitch just came out with a report saying the governor's proposal in California would increase the state's reliance even more on this group. And as a result, California is going to face even more dramatic booms and busts. And so then the question is, what do you do? Do you tax them less and tax everyone else more, which politically is a very difficult argument to make? Or do you create a rainy day fund? Or do you just say, look, when times are good and the wealthy are doing well, we're just going to fund, you know, roads and bridges and one-time construction projects rather than ongoing programs that we're going to have to cut later. But this whole issue of how much to depend on this 1%, I mean, I think that is the fundamental issue for California in the next few years.
Well, let me ask you to take it not only from California but also project it onto a national scale. Do you see meaningful tax reform being a big, important part of the 2012 presidential election?
It should be, but so far I don't see it. I mean, it's... you know, everyone's talking about tax reform, and what they talk about are tweaking the rates here, a little bit higher there, a little bit lower there. Nobody's talking about a fundamental reform that would decrease our reliance on the manic wealthy. And, you know, I think you got to, many people say you got to simplify the tax code, maybe lower overall rates, but reduce deductions, which mainly benefit the wealthy, and just create a more stable, slightly flatter personal income tax system. Either that, or you create a rainy day fund, which no state other than Massachusetts has really been able to do.
Hmm. My guest has been Robert Frank, author of the book, The High Beta Rich, Why the Manic Wealthy Will Take Us to the Next Boom, Bubble, and Bust. Robert, what do you want readers to take away from reading The High Beta Rich?
Well, I want them to take away that, you know, the unconventional wisdom that the rich don't always get richer, that it's a very fast-changing group. You know, if you look at people who make $1 million or more, less than 10% of them are in that group for more than 1 year. So it's really, rather than a permanent plutocracy, we have more what I call the revolving door of riches, where it's a fast-changing group, people rising up, falling out, and that, you know, unfortunately, we all have to be mindful that our economy and our government is increasingly reliant on this group, and we have to take measures to cushion those blows, both on the way up and the way down.
My guest has been Robert Frank. Robert, if you've intrigued some people, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yeah, they can go to my blog, which is called The Wealth Report on WSJ.com, and they can also go to highbetarich.com.
That's highbetarich.com and thewallstreetjournal.com. Robert, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
I enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.